We turn our attention tonight in the Christmas story back to the Gospel of Matthew. We've talked before how Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke both have particular things in it and kind of themes that they focus on. There's just so much for us to look at in the Christmas story, and tonight I want to focus on Matthew chapter 2, the first half of the story anyway, and pick up about the Magi. I've referred to them quite a bit through the Christmas season, but not really focused specifically on their part of the story. I know when I think about the Magi, at least I've always felt this way, there's so much that we imagine and we with wonder maybe think about the Magi and what it was really like and how many were there and how did they travel and how were they dressed and what were the gifts that they brought and just the wonder of the amazing story of the Magi. It certainly is a fascinating story and a fascinating part of the Christmas story. The word that I might even use of the Magi is it's an incredible story that these people would travel so far come in seeking this baby, the King of the Jews. And what a beautiful story, and parts of that are pretty special. It brings up lots of pictures and images in our minds. Some of them may be a little fanciful. I don't know. At least with me, there is. And I love the story. Let's read Matthew chapter 2. I think we'll read to verse 12 tonight. And then my plan is kind of to divide the story into two parts and pick up the second half of it next Sunday night. But focusing on the first 12 verses or so in Matthew chapter 2, let's read of the Magi and of Herod and of Bethlehem. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written, 'But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel.' Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him.' After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route." Once again, we're reminded as we read Matthew's account, and this gospel writer especially, his purpose in telling the story of Jesus. Of course it is to tell the story. It's to tell people of the Christ, both Jew and Gentile. But also the telling in Matthew is geared a little bit more probably to that audience that Matthew was particularly thinking about as he wrote down, as he recorded, as he accumulated the information from different sources that he had talked to, firsthand accounts of Jesus and talking to the disciples of Jesus, maybe his own observations. We're not sure exactly of the whole thing, but far more likely regarding this part of Matthew is he probably wasn't there, may not have been born yet. Who knows when Matthew came on the scene, but he had to go back and hear the story from someone. Somebody revealed it to him and told him the story. And as he tells the story again, he is writing to the Jewish people and trying to make sure that they realize in the first century that Jesus is their Messiah. He's the Jewish Messiah. He's the Jewish King. He's the one that the Old Testament has been pointing to. He is writing the Jewish story, you might say. In his genealogy, he's weaving together the narrative of the line of Joseph, going back to the line of David, the line of David is important. And as he tells Jesus' story throughout the gospel, he is constantly weaving those Old Testament prophecies and quotations into and out of the story so that those that would read it would connect it, especially to the Jewishness of Jesus. I noticed of Matthew, or I read just a couple of days ago of Matthew, that he uses the term to fulfill 12 times in the gospel. When you look at all the references in the book of Matthew to fulfill, we can see how important it was for him to show that Jesus is the fulfillment of all that took place. For example, in chapter 1, verse 22, just a few verses before we came to here, it says, "All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. And so early on, he's saying, all this took place to fulfill. And he'll say that several more times in the next couple of chapters. All this happened to fulfill. And so he gives us some of the details that Luke might not. Luke, for example, has focused on other things. Matthew doesn't mention Nazareth. Again, where's Nazareth? It's in the northern part of Israel, not Judea, not the area of David. Matthew is focused on Jesus' ministry there, and even in the narrative of the Christmas story, his focus is on Bethlehem, the town of David, and how that's fulfilling the Old Testament. And up to 47 times in the book of Matthew is a direct quotation from the Old Testament. That's a lot of quotations from the prophets. Matthew shows us that when Jesus came, he was talking Old Testament prophecies. They were understanding all the gospel writers. When they heard Jesus speak, they knew that Jesus was quoting from the Old Testament and fulfilling those things that are found in the Old Testament. Well, we pick up here at chapter 2 with the story of the Magi. We're told that they are from the east. Now, you know where Israel is, and to the east would be the desert. A little bit to the southeast would be Saudi Arabia, and northeast across the desert would be the Persian Empire, as you follow the Fertile Crescent around. And so from the east, now again we read that the star was in the east. They saw the star in the east. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who's been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east." When I read that, it makes me think that this star, what they saw in the sky, may have just been a phenomena for them to see. Now, that's possible that everybody saw it. I don't know exactly what it was in the sky. The word for star could be inclusive of other astronomical events and planets coming together. You've probably heard different theories and so forth like that. But it would seem that it was these Magi who saw the star in the east. Maybe they saw it in Israel too. I'm not sure, but there's no evidence of that. But it says they saw the star in the east, where they were living. And that star called them to attention. And we're told that they go to Jerusalem. At this point, we don't read that they're following the star. I know sometimes when I tell the Christmas story to children, I kind of have this tradition in preschool where they follow the star all around the sanctuary until it finally comes to Bethlehem. But when they come from the east, the story doesn't tell us that they're following the star. They simply see a star in the east, and that star is the sign. It's the sign of the birth of the King of the Jews. To them, they associate this particular star as being a part of a prophecy, a part of their understanding of the sky. That is why, of course, many people believe that they are likely from one of two places, either Persia, where astrology and astronomy was very important to them and very advanced at this time. And there were many signs that the Persian astrologers looked for in the sky. They read the skies. The sky was to help them to know how to live. We associate astrology with witchcraft and other things. But astrology in the beginning was associated with looking for and watching for what God was going to do. And signs were read that way. So it could have been from Persia. Another likely possibility is people think from the east, which would have been a little bit southeast of Israel instead of further northeast of Israel would be Saudi Arabia. And some people think that and say that because those that settled in the area that we call Saudi Arabia were also descendants of Abraham, Ishmael's descendants, and other descendants. When you read where the tribes went, and we did read quite a bit when we were in Genesis about the descendants of Abraham and where they settled, but a number of the descendants of Abraham settled in what we think of as Saudi Arabia. And some people believe that these were descendants of Abraham. They had heard about Abraham and the promise and that God was going to bring salvation to the world. And they maybe had also read and heard about the Jewish prophecies. And so it's possible, too, that they were looking for something. They were looking for a sign that God was going to move again and work again. And perhaps that's why they came. And so there are, of course, many possibilities. Nobody knows for sure, but they were coming because they had respect for the God of the Jews. They believed that the God of the Jews was real and had command over the earth, and they believed that they should seek that God. When I think about that, I'm reminded how God is able to draw people from every nation, every language, every culture, every continent. God's able to draw people to Him. We wonder sometimes, well, how are people that are in a particular place that may never hear the gospel, how can they be held accountable for that? That's a question I wrestle with. And how do they know? But God is able to speak into the hearts of people all over the world from all kinds of places and draw them to His truth and to His place. God is able to speak to people. And these magi from the east, God somehow put something in their heart, put something in their path, something in their way that gave them an opportunity to respond and come and behold the plan of God, behold the salvation of God. Maybe they knew all the prophecies and knew that God was sending salvation through these through the star, but they knew that God was speaking to them. We also know about them that they were very wealthy. Of course, we realize that with the great gifts that they brought of gold and frankincense and myrrh. When I look at verse 11, I notice especially it says in verse 11, on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense of myrrh. It just seems like they kind of come down, they find baby Jesus, and they open this great big treasure chest. You know, I just imagine this. They unload from, you know, we always say they're on camels. Who knows what they were riding, camels or not, I don't know. But whatever it was, they probably had quite an entourage, and they had these gifts, and they opened their treasures. They brought their best. They brought what to us seems marvelous and amazing, the gold, the frankincense, and the myrrh. But they brought their very best, and they opened them, and they gave them freely. They gave them willingly. They gave them out of love. They gave them out of a heart of thanksgiving that God had given them this opportunity to see them. They were giving. They were led by God. When I think about the Magi and who they are, I think of how they were being led by God all throughout this story. First of all, there's the star in the east that they see, and somehow God gives to them a picture and understanding what that star represented. It represented the Almighty Creator of heaven and earth. If it was the Persians, we know that they worship many gods. But yet God put in their hearts that there was the God of heaven, the God, the Creator, who made the stars, and God would speak to them through that. And then they were being led by God. Why would they load up with all the gifts and the treasures? I mean, what other purpose maybe could have they had other than they knew, or God put it in their hearts that they were to bring to bless. They were to bring to meet the needs of this family. They were to bring their gifts to this baby king, the salvation God. They were to bring these gifts and present them. I would think God had to lead them to do that. God certainly knew that these gifts would be needed by Mary and Joseph, especially as they fled to Egypt. And we knew they were poor from bringing the turtle doves for the dedication. They God knew what they needed. God knew what Mary and Joseph would need for the journey down to Egypt and then back to Israel, back to Judea, but then up to Nazareth and to be settled. God knew their very needs, and somehow a long time ahead, God was working in the lives of these magi in order to meet the needs of Mary and Joseph and the baby. So I think of all these ways that they're being led by God, a star to connect them, then to bring their gifts, and then the specific star that led them to the family in Bethlehem. Again, God speaks again. God gave them what they needed to get to Jerusalem, to get to the capital, to get to the place where they could hear where they could find this king. They seem to have been led to Jerusalem, not to Bethlehem at first. God leads them to Jerusalem. They're going to find out, and they're overjoyed. And then later, the specific star in Bethlehem, they are sent to Bethlehem. And I kind of read from the story. When they get to Bethlehem, that's when God puts the sign up again. You're close. You're close, and then the star goes right over to where they're at. Whatever that was, whether it's a star like we think of or some other miracle in the sky, but God led them to the specific place in the town of Bethlehem. When I look up at the stars and I see, I look for the North Star, it's that way. Where am I at? It's that way, I believe, But you look for the Southern Cross if you're in the Southern Hemisphere or Orion in the Northern Hemisphere, But they're pretty far out there. And to think that they lead you to a specific town and a house in a town, that seems pretty difficult. But God was able to take something in the sky and lead them once they got to Bethlehem to where they were in the town. Again, God knows what we need. He knows exactly to the extent of what we need. And that's beautiful. And then I notice also that God warns them in a dream. So is God leading them all along the way? Yes. And having been warned in a dream, verse 12 says, not to go back to Herod, they return to their country by another route. All along the way, these magi are being led by God. They're being used by God. They're tools of the beauty and the wonder of the story of God as it plays out in the lives of Jesus. And I think of how important that we understand that God wants to use His people. God wants to use the church today to be a witness to the world, to be a witness of who Jesus is. And that's we're to be the magi. I was going to say wise men, but that's not right. We're to be the magi in our world. In that, God can use us to be a witness to people of who Jesus is. And that's a role that's important for us. And then we think tonight of the mysterious star. The mysterious star. Well, one more thing about the Magi is they were seekers, and God honored that. They saw something in the sky, and it set off within them this desire to find God. God put something in there. How much He put in at the beginning and where they got it from and what exactly that was, we don't know, but we know that they were seeking. And they just looked until they found it. They had hearts that were seeking. I think of Magi, I think of that word seeker and how special that word is to seek God and to look for Him. And then we think of the mysterious star, again, in the east. An unusual star in the sky, something different than they'd ever seen before, that represented to the Magi a sign of a special king. Whether it was a single object or objects coming together or something else that God used, a comet, a meteor, who knows, or something totally different, that's up to God. I don't know. But God used what He needed to get their attention. And He uses this to bring them hundreds of miles, probably. If it's from Persia, then it's probably a good 1,000 miles all the way to Florida. You guys think about on your trip and getting down to Florida. If they came from Persia, it'd be about the distance from South Florida to here. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine going down there on a couple of camels or whatever, Ruth and David, And if it's Saudi Arabia, it's more like going to Toronto, But either way, can you just imagine that? What must have been in the heart of the Magi that they were so willing to get up and go and seek, be hungry for, to watch. The Magi, they go to Jerusalem. They go to the capital. At this point, they're not following the star. As far as we know, they just know that God called them with a star, and it's the king of the Jews. And so what do? They go to the capital, the kingdom of the Jews, so that they can find out where this baby is. You think, well, why didn't God just take him directly to Bethlehem? He could have done that. If he could have done everything else he did, he could have done that. But God had a purpose in the people of Bethlehem, knowing and hearing and reading, and even of Herod's story. They go to Bethlehem. They know to go to the capital to find out where he is born. And they're asking, they're seeking. They don't know. They just know they're trying to find the king. It says that, where is the one? They ask. They come to King Herod, probably to pay tribute to the king, to the leader in Jerusalem. I don't know if they know his character at this point at all or not, but they know that they got to go to the boss in order to be, moving around Israel, trying to find the baby king. I mean, the king should know. King Herod should know this. And so they go to Herod and they ask him, verse 2, where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw a star in the east and we've come to worship him. They seem to be very innocent of knowing who Herod is and what Herod is going to do. But they come and they just kind of innocently ask, well, this is where we're from. This is why we're here. And again, what's their purpose? Their purpose in coming to find Jesus is to worship him. They want to come to worship. That's who they are. That's what they feel. That's what they believe. That's what they want. They were truly seekers to worship God. They come and they speak to Herod. And then Herod is disturbed by this. Verse 3, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Just imagine the rumbling and the stirring. And you think, well, why was he so upset about that? Did he really believe that a little baby was going to rise up against him? Well, we know about Herod that he was afraid of a lot of people, and he lived his life afraid of a lot of people. But what Herod does, he called together the people's chief priests and teacher of the law. See, Herod was not really a Jew. He was from the southern part of Israel called Idumea, down below a good 100 miles or so south of Jerusalem, the desert area. Idumea was where Herod was from, and he wasn't really a Jew. One of his parents, his mother was the Jew, if I remember right, but his father was not. He was not really regarded as a Jew, and he didn't come to be the leader of the Jews by the means by which other leaders had been. He was appointed by the Roman Senate. And because he was a military man, and he was a political leader, he was appointed by the Romans because he was known to be so tough. And he would keep his hand on the province, and he would get the taxes for the Romans. And so as long as he did that, he raised the taxes and got them sent to Rome. And he kind of kept a lid on all the trouble and problems in Israel, then the Romans were happy with him. Now, he was supposed to be a Jew to be in that post, but he wasn't. And so the Jews despised him anyway, despised all the things that he did. And then you have his character to boot and all the things about him. But Herod was very unpopular, but he was so strong militarily and brutal that he suppressed his enemies greatly. But when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him. What does he do? He goes and he gathers the Jewish leaders and the teachers, and he says, hey, this guy is saying that there's a king of the Jews being born here. And what is this from? And is that right? Is that what we've been told by the Old Testament, by the prophets? And of course, they gather together, and they know the prophecies. The leaders in Jesus' day know the messianic prophecies. It's not that they don't know. And it's not that the Jews weren't looking for a Messiah. They knew that a Messiah was coming. The theology of the Messiahship was very strong in Jesus' day, but they refused to accept that Jesus was the Messiah. They didn't believe that. They weren't ready for it. They wanted to reject that it could happen then, because they saw that as a loss. They knew the prophecies, but they didn't know God. They knew the law, as they knew the law. but they didn't have the spirit of the law within them. They knew the prophecies, but they didn't have the heart of God with the prophecies. And so it created this stirring and this trouble. And so they tell Herod, well, Herod, it's really clear. We know where he's going to be born. He's going to be born in Bethlehem. And of course, then I see in verse 7, what does Herod do? It says, he called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. Now you see Herod doing his devious, manipulative thing. He calls in the Magi and he says, hey, you guys come over here. I want to know your information. And he kind of comes in and he says, I want to know your information. Okay, I want to know your information. And you can just see how Herod is in his diabolical way, he's playing out the plan of God. He doesn't know it. He doesn't realize it. But in his hostility and anger and all those things, he's playing out these terrible things. And so he says to him, well, he's going to be born in Bethlehem, and I want to worship him too. I don't know why Herod didn't go himself. You know, maybe he had no idea how to find the baby. Maybe thought, well, you know, the Jews will really believe that I'm a good Jew if I go to seek the Messiah. In fact, I want to worship him too. You guys go find him, come back and tell him. See, at this time, he doesn't know the Magi either. He doesn't know that they're being led by God. And he thinks he's going to manipulate them. And he's going to use them. But in reality, it's God is the one who's giving the direction. And so he says to him, well, you go to Bethlehem. That's where you'll find the baby. And then come back and tell me, because I too want to worship him. But they know God reveals to them the heart of Herod. The purpose of the Magi again was to worship. The purpose of Herod is to find the child so he can put him to death. I notice when I read about the worship that it's the Magi who worship first. First time we have the word worship in the New Testament is here with the Magi. I've always thought the shepherds worship, and I believe they did from everything about the story. But the word worship is found first here in the account of the Magi. These are Gentiles, probably. Most likely they're Gentiles. They know something about the story. They know something about the prophecies. But they're seekers. And God gives them the blessing of first worship. At least the word that is used there. These Gentiles were first to worship Jesus. That word worship. The Magi, they were seeking, they were listening, they were following. They were following the gift. They were giving their hearts in worship. And what a precious part of the story the Magi are. And then to think for a few minutes about the town of Bethlehem. Bethlehem was not a large city. It was a town. But it was very important and significant. It wasn't real small either, like a lot of others were, but it wasn't like Jerusalem. It, of course, was called the City of David. The word Bethlehem meant the city of bread, because it was kind of, I understood it to be a fertile bread basket right in that area, the city of bread. And then it became called the City of David, because that became David, where David was from. And, of course, he became the great chosen king, and the Davidic line would be through whom the Messiah came. So it became the city of prophecy, and the prophecies about Bethlehem are found in the Old Testament, which are quoted here. It also is the city of great wonder and anticipation and excitement. Again, what did the teachers of the law say when Herod came? I mean, it could have been anywhere in Israel as far as Herod knew. He didn't know all the prophecies, but when he asked, it's Bethlehem. And they knew that. They knew that Bethlehem was very important, a very special place. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Again, you have this quotation and very direct reference. If we would read this, we might... You know, if we would read it outside of the context of Matthew, we'd say, well, is that a messianic? But it's a direct quotation, of course, from the book of Micah. So they all knew that. The leaders knew that. And it was a city of prophecy, a city of wonder. But then it became a city of great fear fear of King Herod, afraid of losing power. Again, we think about Herod the Great. You hear that name throughout the New Testament. Herod the Great, he ruled Judea from about 37 B.C. to 4 B.C. So he did have a long reign. And of course, you've heard a lot about Herod. Now, when you look at dates, of course, like this, they're very confusing. Understanding that there is a Jewish calendar and then the Julian calendar, and I don't know that I've got it all figured out, but I understand that they're not the same, and they're off probably about 6 or 7 years in matching up. So when you talk B.C. and A.D., this is according to a Julian, a Roman calendar that we use today. Jesus was probably born about 5 or 6 B.C. Now, you know he couldn't have been, but when you look at a calendar, that's what it indicates. Herod died in 4 B.C. We know this is Herod, and we know that he died after Jesus was born, and they fled to Egypt, and so that's kind of the evidence. I mean, 4 B.C. is agreed on in world history. All the sources agree that that's when Herod died. His death was very detailed. The gruesomeness of his death was detailed, and where his tomb was recently found, I believe in 2007. However, it had been ransacked, but in a place called Herodian's Hill. And there were a lot of inscriptions about Herod being buried there. His bones had been taken out by a robber a long time ago. But he died in 4 B.C., so Jesus would have been born probably 5 or 6 B.C. or 7, possibly 7 B.C. as you look at a calendar. But what you know about Herod, he was appointed by the Roman Senate. He wasn't a Jew. And so he really was a puppet of the Romans. And he just did everything he could to garner favor with the Roman Senate. We also know from his character, he was violent. He had many people in his own family put to death. He was a murderer. You just can list the things about Herod. He was oppressive. He was a liar. He was manipulative. As we see in verse 7, he calls them back in and gets the information, kind of these two groups going against each other. He was known as being very paranoid, being depressed. You might say of Herod, these are probably some of his better qualities. I don't know. But he was a man that was hated. He was a man that was feared. He was a man that had in his heart a great hostility toward truth and righteousness. And here he is in the middle of the story. And he's deeply disturbed, it says here in verse 3. Well, late in his reign, this would be late in his reign, of course, when Jesus was born. He'd only live a couple of more years. It's toward the end, but it seems like the older he got, the more deranged he probably got. So he is very fearful. And any threat, any perceived threat by Herod, he would want to destroy it and put people to death, and he did so. The teachers of the law had the prophecies, but they did not have the Spirit of God. And so later on when Jesus would come to public ministry, they would reject him. They had all the prophecies. They knew he was going to be born in Bethlehem. They knew all these prophecies from Micah and Isaiah and the Psalms about Jesus. And they could see them being fulfilled, but they refused to accept that Jesus was the Messiah. On the other hand, Herod rejected him already for a different reason. And he would try to kill him, believing that if he killed all the babies in Bethlehem, that it would take care of this king of the Jews that these magi had come to worship. In Bethlehem to this day, in a place very, very near to where the cave is that is visited by hundreds of thousands of people a year, Jesus' birthplace, these caves on the kind of the hillside around Bethlehem. Of course, they're covered now by a large church, the Church of the Nativity, but some of you have been to Israel and you've been to Bethlehem, and my dad and I had that opportunity to go and visit that place and descend down the steps and past all the ornate hangings and lights and gold and silver and all that's a part of the Church of the Nativity, and then you go down these kind of rock, stone hewn out of the of the of the mountain steps, and you go down into this chamber, and there, of course, they have the black curtains and fancy lights, and then they have this place, and this is the place they call the place where Jesus was born. And for me, I loved going there. It was meaningful to me. Not that I believe that was where Jesus was born. It could have been, but it was in that area. And it was a great moment just for me. I felt to be there and just to sense what happened when Jesus came into the world and how beautiful and wonderful that is. And then not far from there, maybe a couple hundred yards, or maybe not even that far, is what's called the Cave of the Innocents. And that's where to this day there is the remembering of these children, these boys that would have been killed by Herod. Of course, nobody knows how many. There's a lot of speculation, but there's a cave there, and it's called the Cave of the Innocents, or the Grotto of the Innocents. And you can go in that cave, and you can hear the story again of the Magi and the visit and Herod. And it's actually a place that's maybe half as big as this platform. And you can go in, and they have these little chambers with boxes, ossuaries of bones. And of course, you know, I don't know what they really say about them, but it's a place to remember this story. And Dad and I attended a Catholic Mass there. They were having a Catholic Mass that day in the Cave of the Innocents. And I said, well, can we go? Well, are you Catholic? No. But, well, I guess you can sit in the back. And so we did, and we enjoyed being there. It was meaningful to me. And then they did allow us to take communion. But just to remember this part of the story, how precious it was. And we think about the depth of Herod's ugliness. And we read then in verse 16, what happened. It says, when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping in great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted because they are no more. We think of the beauty of the Christmas story, and we think of the brutality of the Christmas story, and how in the midst of the beautiful picture of God is both the beauty and the wonder of the Magi, but then the evilness of sin in Herod, and how Christ came to be the Savior of the world, how he came to bridge the gulf, to bridge the gap, to send Jesus to die for the sins of the world. There's so many things about this story that are precious, so many things to think about and to hold on to. I'm planning that we'll pick up at this point next Sunday evening, and say a little bit more about what Herod did specifically, and then we move to the Holy Family trip to Egypt. Why did they go to Egypt? Why Egypt? Why was Egypt a refuge? And what part of the story that is, and then as they come back, and then they return to Nazareth as we continue, and we finish really the Christmas story at that point. Thank you for being here tonight. Anything come up in your mind or your heart that you'd like to mention or talk about, or something from this story that gets your attention that you'd want to say? Anything at all? Thank you for being here tonight. God bless. Hope you have a good week and a happy new year. Might see you Wednesday night if you're here. If not, we'll see you next year. Blessings. Hope you have a good evening.